I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Nicola Bartlett. Welcome, Nicola.
Thank you. I feel very welcome. Thank you.
Well, it's really lovely to meet you because I've seen images of you here and there. You're an actor.
Mm-hmm.
You went to NIDA.
I did.
You've been on the stage.
I have.
You've been on television.
I have. I've even been on the big screen.
And I was going to say the big screen. The Sparrows, was it?
Little Sparrows,
Little
yeah.
Little Sparrows.
Yeah, that was a most unusual thing that happened. And it took me to Rome.
Took you to Rome?
Mm-hmm.
Became quite an item on the festivals?
It did, it did. It was twice on Channel 4. It got into the... Is it the Palm Springs? You're thinking it's my chosen, I'd know more. Palm Springs Film Festival, it was in the category there. It would have had American release, but they had to actually, I think, pay to get the film re-transposed onto another format or whatever, and they weren't willing to. It was a curious... I did 5 days filming. I was contacted and asked if I'd just come and play this small part. Yeah, I know. Well, it was... Look, it's all... You know that thing, the idea of, in fact, I went to a philosophy talk last night, they're talking about, you know, how we construct the world, or, you know, do we are predeterminists, da 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 da, and I tend to think of everything through narrative and things. So I actually was in the middle of doing treatment of hepatitis C, which was a year's interferon and ribavirin. It was a bundle of fun, you know, and I had been thinking about how my sister died of cancer, and she died without saying goodbye to her children. Yeah. Yeah, that still has me. I mean, I understand better now, but still, ow, what a thing. And I was thinking about love and enduring love. And then suddenly I get this phone call, asked if I'd come and just have a chat with this director who had this small part in the film of a woman dying of cancer. God, I've done a few of them, a few with dementia. I'm, you know, play the mad ones or the dying ones. And she, who disappears the first half of the film. So I went in to talk. And it, the thing about interferon ribavirin is it really reduces your scope. You can, what you can actually do without feeling overwhelmed. Anyway, by the by. So I went in to talk to her, and this is what I had been thinking about, enduring love. What is love? And she started talking about this film, and I went, God, that's so weird. She's talking about what I'm thinking about.
Mm.
So we did a few days of sort of development of relationships, and then it was all just impro. So we just improvised.
Wow.
Yeah, the whole thing. Which wasn't how it appeared
in
the credits.
No.
Yes, I know. History. Learning. And so in a sense, I told imaginatively the story. I have three daughters. I have a tattoo now.
So as you say, someone was mining your thoughts, your emotions, your recent experiences.
It was synchronicity, I think. Mm. She was doing that, I was doing that, and then something I'd been thinking about actually formed a story that became a film.
Well, imagine this. Imagine this is a scenario that not far from Fremantle, we have a submarine base. And Australia strikes an agreement with the US and the UK.
Imagine that.
They call it AUKUS. And nuclear-powered submarines suddenly come more frequently than they do now down at Garden Island, not far from Fremantle. And the governments and the military, Navy, they all take care, they say, of nuclear waste, and Australia gets in the business. But there's some sort of disaster.
Yeah. A natural one, maybe, you know, we're on a narrow continental shelf. All you need is a tectonic plate movement further out at sea, and our narrow continental shelf would mean there'd be a massive surge.
In comes the tsunami.
In comes the tsunami.
And you think you've got all of this under control.
Oh, the folly of humans.
I wonder if a playwright would ever think of doing something like that.
I don't know. I mean, do you think Fukushima might have actually... inspire somebody's imagination.
Have already forgotten about Fukushima, but perhaps they haven't.
They haven't in Fukushima. And they haven't if you're dealing with the radioactive drift across the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
Did you know in Fukushima, those who had worked on it, the original construction, original workers, formed a group that I can't remember the name of right now, which is a terrible habit of mine of going blank on these things, to go back and help restore it because they felt it was their responsibility rather than those who had gone in the younger ones to actually take action. Which is interesting, isn't it? Because, yeah, funnily enough, there's a play coming up that I start rehearsals of next week called The Children.
Don't tell me.
I know. Who'd have thought, hey?
Who'd have thought? The Children.
The Children.
It's not going to be off the Heath Ledger Theatre.
It is actually, yeah.
Love the Heath Ledger Theatre.
It is a lovely theatre.
It's got such a warm feel.
And it's got quite good seats. Your bottom doesn't get numb on them, which I do find something. You know what I mean? You get that kind of twitchy thing when you're sitting for a while. But you don't do that.
24th of August would be a good date.
It would be a very good date. You know, I can just imagine the set, though I'm not supposed to be able to imagine the set, but I actually have, and it's absolutely, it's excellent. It's so excellent. We've really got to be on our game. I'm now going to talk. Yeah, we've really got to be because it's a three-hander. Let's get into it.
It's a three-hander, and your name comes first, and you're Hazel.
I am Hazel. In fact, we've got such English, such country names. Hazel, Caroline Brazier plays Rose, and Humphrey Bower plays Robin, my husband.
So Robin Hazel, and then Rose appears.
That's right. That's right.
Lovely,
between two thorns, so to speak.
Names. People couldn't keep your own names. It could be Humphrey, Nicola and Caroline.
Oh, God, wouldn't that be awful?
It would work, though.
It would. I mean, it really would. It's because here we are dealing with something that feels off kilter in a time that feels out of kilter, and we all feel slightly dislocated from, and the play creates space that's just slightly off kilter. Funny. It's very funny. But it's off kilter. And that whole thing of, you know, you're living your life and suddenly you reach a point and you go, oh, I'm here. Oh, hang on. What, you know, and what are my responsibilities? And I thought life was going along this way and I did all the right things. And now there are these consequences.
How old are these characters?
They're in their 60s.
Ah, so they're... Are they still working or are they?
No. So you have the husband and wife. So all three. Shall I divulge this?
Oh, yes. Yes,
cool.
Go on.
Great. Okay,
we won't tell anyone else, though.
They all worked as nuclear physicists on the building of a nuclear reactor nearby where they are. Within, you actually can see the tops of the towers from this little holiday cottage shack that they are staying in.
Like Fremantle near the coast.
It's absolutely, yeah. And two of them are there, and then the husband and wife are there, and Rose appears.
Rose turns up.
She does.
Imagine she's dressed in a rather stunning long red frock or something, Nicola.
No, it's even more interesting than that I'm not going to tell you about. No, she is... Because the other thing is, she creates these three... I mean, it does have English syntax, but it works anywhere. It'll work anywhere. And she has this... These different personality types of our generation. There's Hazel, who has been the classic. She was nuclear physicist. She then had the children. She does the washing. She does the cooking. The classic.
She's the superwoman in a sense.
She's a superwoman. She's the invisible woman in that way. I think those duties are very much, you know, the invisible duties, you know, still are they valued. I think we should all be paid for them. I hate cleaning with that. And I even hate washing up even more, and leave it until it annoys me. Sorry, go on, ask me a question.
Are you channeling Hazel or Nicola?
Well, I've read the play several times and I've been waiting to do this because we had the go-ahead over a year ago. So, yeah, I think, for me, working as an actor, I work, I suppose, a bit osmotically. It's like learning lines. I used to find it easy to learn lines, and now I find it's more of when it's soaked in, so the text doesn't feel like text anymore. which is a beautiful thing.
Well, we should just diverge
okay.
for a moment, because yeah. that is something I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
My acting career finished as I finished high school.
Ah.
But loved it. And I was trying to recall, coming in to meet you today
yeah.
to make this podcast, how one did go about learning one's lines. My memory was it was just repetition, rehearsal, and repetition. And some people were just remarkably good at looking at something and remembering it. But
yeah.
what's been your own experience? And are you taught techniques to be an actor and to be on the stage in particular?
Okay, well, that's several different questions in one.
There are, yes.
Okay, so, I could go down the NIDA line or go down the text learning how I learn lines?
Well, go down the line, yeah, learning a line.
Okay, and then we go to NIDA if you like. I used to, I think, learn them quite easily. I mean, I've always been a bit of a badass at paraphrasing, which I understand now is more a process for me. Finding finding the truth or the meaning for me in it, you know, why am I saying this? It's always like, well, why am I saying this? Why is this character saying this? So but now I find my doubt. It's not. My doubt for whether I remember the lines correctly is more because I know I might paraphrase. But on the other hand, my ability to deal with text is much improved, because when I know them, I'll not forget them soon after I finish a play, but when I know them, they're part of my body, they're part of my structure.
Yeah.
And then the greatest pleasure of that is that then when you're in the moment on stage with the dynamic with an audience, it's a mixture of falling and flying. You really, how does it happen? And that is just such a reward. That's awesome.
That's
love
the exciting
that.
Moment. Well, this play is written by Lucy Kirkwood, who's not of her parents' generation. She's a little younger.
Mm.
The play was a great success in the UK. It's been to New York, where it's been a great success. Here it is, soon to be on at the Heath Ledger Theatre in Northbridge, Perth. And you mentioned English syntax earlier.
Mm.
Do the words in plays get changed for where they're going? To what extent can you decide you're going to sort of change the words, paraphrase?
Oh, I don't think you could do it.
Not
allowed out
to
of respect. Well, I mean, I think it's disrespectful of the author's work, the playwright's work, without actually contacting the playwright.
Mm.
I don't think you do. Because the syntax is somewhat British, doesn't mean to say it necessarily will be. It's just you can easily see it. And in fact, in some ways, I was thinking about it, how you have to be careful not to do broad brushstrokes, because it does so easily go there that you might miss the nuances. Or do you know what I mean? It's like if you've got something that I know how this goes, but you miss
yes.
all there, the rest that is there. So you pay no attention to what
yes.
is there. You need to look underneath it. Does that make sense?
It does. You wouldn't want to get a call from Will Shakespeare to say that he spent
well,
a long time.
Well, did he write them? Or was it just a land? I mean, you know.
Well, you might get a call from someone else.
Don't we like to? Yeah. We think we know history.
But yes, it would be beyond the pale to rewrite Shakespeare, whoever wrote Shakespeare.
Yeah, I mean, it gets adapted.
It does get adapted.
Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, there's one on in Mel. No, no, that's a streetcar named Desire. Gosh, yes. But no, there is. There's a rewriting of Macbeth at MGC. Anyway, I won't say any more about that because I don't remember.
Coming back to the children.
Yes.
The thing I've been wondering is who are the children?
Well, who are the children? All the children of this generation. Those of the next generation coming up from these people who, with the best of intentions, however they saw it as boomers, were part of constructing this nuclear reactor, which has, as a result of a natural event, not even human error, natural event, has done a Fukushima. And who is responsible? What is our responsibility to the next generation? How do we deal with the consequences, it seems to be, the consequences of our actions when younger that will impact on the next generation? What responsibilities do we have and how do we face those? Which is also, I think, part of the thing of facing of how do I deal with getting older in a society where I feel redundant, but in fact my view of society has changed, and that it's tough. Getting aging is not for the faint-hearted. You really have to... You really have to turn around and face and look at yourself and how things are, and you know, that.
So this play, and the playwrights have messages for us. It sounds like it's not just about the simple threat of nuclear things going bad and perhaps contaminating the planet and killing the planet and us in the process, and destroying things as we know them, but asking much more universal questions along the lines you've just stated.
Yes, it doesn't. It isn't didactic. It doesn't try and pose answers. I mean, this is a time where we're kind of all asking, how do we deal with this?
Well, we live in a strange
world. What are our responsibilities as such? Pardon?
Well, we have a former president of the United States who's standing to be president again, and nearly copped a bullet a couple of days.
Well, he did, although Steve Bannon... I mean, it's so easy to conspiracy theory, isn't it? Steve Bannon has said, oh, you know, we've really got to watch it, he could be out for it, and how did this guy get on the roof? But really, it's madness. Yes, we have.
And the whole world's engaged.
I mean, you can't... It'd be hard to write satire now.
No, you can't. You can't.
You can't
have any... So the world is complicated, and we, the older ones in this world, think we've had certain experiences over life, and we can start to I don't know, consider and understand what's happening, but I'm not sure that I can. So in this play, you've got these nuclear physicists. They've been around the place. They've been involved in setting up whatever and is challenged by the disaster that happens naturally.
Yeah.
And I mean, what is their responsibility? Can't they just quietly retire on the coast and go for a walk and go fishing?
Well, I think in a way that's what they're hoping. Almost to turn their backs on it. It's too hard, which I mean, is very tempting, isn't it? I go work in the garden and forget about the crap outside. And that is the challenge. If you refer, which is part of what also, I think, which one knows, part of Lucy's thinking, which was, you know, it's like we've also got very used to having a lot and we need to get used to having less. It's to take responsibility for our past actions. In this case, look, if I tell you, that's a spoiler of the play. Do I do that?
Well, perhaps you can whisper it.
Well, if having been involved in what has turned out to be a huge mess, should they therefore be involved, what are their responsibilities to cleaning up that mess? Which I suppose, if you then, you know, take that metaphor up further, is all of us going, what are our responsibilities and how? How do we?
And that then becomes a great question.
Yeah.
Just take the baby boomers who have now predictably got to the end of, towards the end of their lives.
Mm.
And they cop a lot of the flak these days. I mean, in the context of this play, you can say, I suppose, well, you guys built this. There's a problem here, Houston. And it's you baby boomers' responsibility now to fix it up. And, of course, in environmental regulation, there are actually rules and sort of mantra for dealing with this. The polluter should pay. So if you're the generation who's created this problem, shouldn't you have to go in there and deal with it? At the same time, I suspect... all of the kids and grandkids of the older baby boomers now sort of say, keep out of the road, Poppy. Keep out of the way, Grandma. We'll fix this up. We'll try and solve your mess, but please stay out of the road. We don't want any more problems from you.
Yes, I agree, which is part of that thing, I think, anyway, of being older, of that thing of being somewhat redundant or patronised. Mm. I mean, there is, but that's another question. I mean, it seems to me, I've been mulling on this one, that it's a two-way street, that idea of step out of the way, we know what's going on. Walking here, I had a young woman who just walked straight in front and looked at me, walked straight across my path, and her whole thing was, I don't have to do this for you, which was very young. Really. And I thought, wow, yeah, okay. Sorry, I've digressed on that, but I think we've lost the value of elders. And maybe we've forgotten how to be elders, and maybe the young don't know how to deal with elders. We have lost the value of community. We put our old people, we end up in little retirement places, or we go on cruises around the world, or we don't. But we've lost essential, small is beautiful, of what community is.
And unless you live in Fremantle.
Well, yes, so I have to, yes. I remember Fremantle back in 1977 when I first lived here. And I'm being nostalgic, but it was thriving. And I don't see that anymore. I'm not quite sure what we are apart from for young children and retirees now. I don't know where our heart is.
It is a sophisticated retirement village at Waimalama. Coming back to the children though, I'm still fascinated by whether the play is going to make me think that Hazel and Robin and Rosa are in fact the children, or it's their children and their children.
Oh, well, I think both are true.
So,
yes, I think both are true.
Who is going to be, in a sense, a target audience? Who's the demographic for this?
Well,
I have to get there and
great. I think, in fact, I've got an interview after this, which is with a university station, and I think who's the target audience? I think all ages. I think this is a discussion and something we all need to think about. Because while I'm saying about the older people and not feeling valued, there's also the learning. I think I do think we have to take responsibility for what we've done. And I do think we need to learn to live with less. You know, I hear, yes, okay, boomers are given a hard time, says the next generation, every generation, what it used to be called, the generation gap, and it becomes more dire. I mean, my daughters can't afford to buy houses. One of them might be able to, the other two can't, because they didn't lock into the system that was sort of hard, you know, you will do school, you will do this, you will do, and they went, no, I don't know who I am yet, I'm going to, so, and they wouldn't anyway, they couldn't afford it. Well, I mean, that's absurd. Oh, if they're not going to do that, then you need to have a society which has a more stable rental situation. Right? I'll focus on having, and we have so much now, but we also have such massive debt. So I think we've all, you know, there's a general thing of being conned. I feel like we've all, in a sense, been conned with the idea of you've got to have more, you've got to do more, you've got the internet age, so you actually don't think about where you are, whatever your age, whatever your generation, whatever your time. And this play, I think, poses it because it goes, okay, time stopped. Here we are in a situation, three people, their beautiful farmhouse, gone. What they had, gone, and they're trying to pretend it's normal. But it's not normal, and they know it's not normal. But we do that thing, don't we? The ape with the large forebrain and the adaptable short-term memory, where we go, oh, yeah, I can adapt. Yes, okay. Oh, this is normal now. Oh, yeah, this is normal. Oh, yeah, this is normal, you know. Squash, 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 faster, faster, faster. I remember the one-hour lunch break. What happened to the one-hour lunch break, for fuck's sake? Pardon me, for goodness sake, you know. 20 minutes, half an hour. Get back, sit at the computer. Two screens. Work. What's going on? Where are we? How do we feel?
Well, a play that induces
Did
that.
Did I just go on a rant? Sorry.
A play that induces that and makes you think about that. And makes you say, can we live properly and well as a community?
With less.
With less. That is a tremendous question.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see this. But it also sounds like Rose appears, in a sense, out of nowhere. But
yeah,
she may have been there before.
Oh, well, yes. So there is the... So this is because it's a love triangle.
Ah, okay. Oh, now we're getting into the proper,
now we're
the
getting
proper
into
space.
So,
all the
so
other stuff's
love
nonsense.
Triangle.
A love triangle.
It's a love triangle.
Yeah, it's a fascinating...
Lots of things going on in this play.
There are lots of things going on. I'm so glad you're holding me to the line here, because I'd probably disappear all over the place. There are lots of things going on in this place of three people who... two of them think they have the same agenda, but they don't, in fact. So there are three different agendas going on there. I'd say one is grounded with the idea of children. Two, I don't know about the other two. One, not at all. So there are three different perspectives on this. How do they deal with it? How do they deal with being back, the three of them together? And what has happened to them since the last time they met? And two of them have met potentially more frequently than the other one thought they had as such. So
spicy.
Spicy.
So there is a lot going on, and the way you put that, this challenge of, you think three people who ostensibly have a lot in common, including training, looking at these problems, we all simply agree that that's a bottle of water and we all agree it is. But then you've got these people with their own different experiences in life, and they're not sure it's a bottle of, and if it is a bottle, they're not sure it's got anything in it, and some of them think it has.
And would I drink it?
And would you drink it anyway?
Yeah. Do I know what's in there? Yeah. So there are three people wrestling with, essentially one comes and poses this, what she feels is a responsibility that they have, and then how do the other two deal with that, and what is their relationship? And what in the end becomes the priority, the most important thing? And that's very interesting. And then where they step off?
I'm duty bound because I don't know the answer anyway. And I was trained.
Well, we don't, do we? That's it.
But I'm not going to ask how this play ends because I don't know.
I'm going to tell you.
It's going to be fascinating. Let me ask you some questions, technical things about the play. I often like plays that don't have intervals. Does this one have an interval?
Jeepers, I don't know.
Because sometimes you get caught up in the entire drama.
I hate it when there's an interval, to be honest.
I do too.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm knowing the director, I doubt she would have an interval. She doesn't, you know, she wants you in there and thinking all the way.
That's what I would have thought.
If we work it, you'll be sitting there chewing my cuticles madly or leaning forward in the seat, because I will be so sucked into it what would I do?
There's one question. And then the next one is...
Yep.
As an audience member, you want to experience various forms of theatre. You sometimes just want to go to the one-hander. And your co-star, Humphrey Barr, I interviewed recently.
Yeah.
He's just about to open tonight in Fremantle,
on
Imaginary Life.
Was it tonight?
And in a sense, it's a two-hander because he's got someone walking around playing music as well.
Yeah, I've
But have you done the one-hander? Have you done a two-hander? Have you done a three-hander before?
I must have. God, what have I done?
Have
I done a one-hander? I did a two-hander. In fact, interesting, going back to the thing about learning text, I did a play with Peter Holland decades ago, and Peter learned all his lines before the play started, which I was gobsmacked about, I didn't. So we did a two-hander. I didn't do terribly well in that. It was the first... In fact, may I digress?
Please.
It was the first play I did after my marriage had broken down, and I'd been watching, you know, I had three daughters, and I'd gone to NIDA. I was a bit of a geriatric. I was 29 when I went to NIDA.
Oh, my God.
I know. There was with 18-year-olds.
Did you falsify your passport?
Nick Enright auditioned me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was absolutely fantastic. Where was I going with that now? You see, I've gone off, it's what happens, and I start...
Three-handers, two-handers.
So that was a two-hander. I'm sure I've done a three-hander. Have I done a one-hander?
Three-handers,
I think I've done.
The one-hander is, in a sense, a monologue, and I guess it can be done in various ways. And I can remember a few that I loved. You get caught up in them.
Did you see RBG?
No, I didn't, and everybody said how fabulous it was.
I mean, that was how I saw it. It was her 117th performance.
Mm.
Beautifully written. Beautiful work by her. I think a testament to why it is that players should go to the provinces first before they come back, because you need time with good text to actually drop into it.
Tunes them up.
Mm.
What are the challenges of a three-hander? Is it any different from, you know, importance of being earnest with people coming and going?
I think the challenge with any play, I don't know about, say, three-hander, is are you listening to each other? Are you in the same play? And it depends on three. I did a three-hander late 2000s called by Edward Albee called The Goat. And my character only comes in the second act or second scene, and is virtually like an aria where she actually takes this room apart. She destroys it. But that, the way that was concerned, that worked. But then I have been in plays where you wonder if you're all in the play together. So I think it's more that. Are you all on the same page? Are you listening?
I'd assume, but probably totally incorrectly, whenever I make an assumption, it usually is, that you'd have a minimalist set for a play like this.
Yes. 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 They have worked to Bruce McIndran. We've got a fantastic team. Bruce McIndran designing. Oh, come on, don't do that. Oh, God, I'm so awful. I don't do that. Rachel Deese doing the sound.
Matthew Marshall's doing the lighting.
Yes, thank you, Matt Marshall. Mel Cantwell directing. Thank you for that. You saved my ass there. I get the kind of like this nervous energy and I can't remember things.
Well, you're probably just thinking about your lines. Now tell me, coming back to what we were talking about earlier, what period of time from, in a sense, go to woe does it... Has it taken to get ready, or will have it taken to get ready?
Oh, great. Well, they're pitifully smaller, generally. We've got 4 weeks plus production week, which is a bit of a luxury. Mm. You know, that we'll be working very hard to get that, because to do the play justice and to do the audience, to respect the audience for the quality performance that they ought to be able to expect, will be working hard. And the way it has been designed will have to be right on the money. But the play is just delicious like that. I mean, it really is. It's quite musical in how it's there, and it's got things, how it throws from one thing to another. So it's all set, it's in one set of time. She arrives, Rose arrives, and then at the end, when they've made decisions about things, they're all in accord about it. And they've come to me. So that's it. So it's just, you know, however length of time that is.
A day in the life.
Yeah, less than that.
Less than that.
An evening, a late afternoon and evening.
Can't wait, Nicola. Perhaps I'll sort of tune us out of this by noting what Mel Cantwell, the director, has observed about it. He says, The Children is a beautifully nuanced play that examines family, desire, friendship, and morality.
Mm.
You've covered all of that. It's an urgent story about the future, but deeply rooted in the here and now.
Mm.
With characters whose struggles and connections are universally relatable. Sounds like they are.
Mm.
While the play skillfully examines the legacies we leave behind, a topic that is more relevant now than ever as we enter the nuclear debate.
Do you know what I really love about that? Is the fact, I haven't read that or heard that, but I would be in full accord with that, having now digested the play. Yes, it is. I am so happy that, you know, Kate Champion, how they came to, because we're actually relevant. We're pertinent to the time, and these are things we are thinking about. Mm. And, you know, we don't need things to be didactic. We need to be working out common ground.
And thinking.
Yeah, and thinking.
Thinking. It's been lovely meeting you.
Pleasure.
I've really enjoyed chatting, and I can't wait, as I know everybody else who will listen to this podcast won't be able to wait to go and see you. Do you like your character?
Yes, oh yes, Rose. I mean, yes, I like Rose too. I like them all, actually. Yes, Hazel. At first with Hazel, I went, oh. And then I looked at more and more, and I thought, God, you know, that we have a lot in common. I was a mother, single parent, brought up kids. And there is that. Yeah, anyway. You know, yes, there is that commonality.
Okay.
I like her a lot.
Thanks, Hazel. Oops. Nicola.
Oops.
See you then.
Bye.